if we're talking turkeys.
All right. Troy Rodakowski, welcome back to Gary Lewis Outdoorsman. This is a podcast where we talk about big game hunting and rifles and ammunition. And in this particular episode, we're going to talk about big game hunting as it relates to turkeys. And it's turkey season. And so anyway, welcome back, Troy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Gary. You know, I always appreciate having a conversation with you.
In this time of the year, we are turkey hunters and we hunt bear too. While we're hunting turkeys, we always have bear tags.
We're
always trying to allocate time for this and time for that. And how can people find you? How are the ways people can find you, Troy?
You can find me on Instagram at Troy Outdoors. You can find me at Troy Rodakowski on Facebook, or you can look me up at www.baileyseed.com.
Okay. So you, like me, are an outdoor writer. And what publications do you publish in regularly?
Regularly, it's Northwest Sportsman, Oregon Hunter, and a few others here and there. You know, it's Spotty, Muzzle Blast Magazine, Bear Hunter Hunting Magazine, Alaska Shooting Journal, and several. Kind of.
Why did you become an outdoor writer?
I just enjoyed telling stories and informing people and helping people. And, you know, it was something that I felt that we were losing, you know, the awareness of the outdoors and the outdoor world and hunting and fishing. And I wanted to keep it alive because I grew up reading Outdoor Life and Field and Stream and Game and Fish magazine and whatnot, Sports Afield. And I remember dreaming of being in the outdoors when I read a lot of those articles, and I wanted to keep that going. It was
really fun. Yep, that's right. Okay, then today we want to talk about yard birds versus mountain birds. Okay, and just saying that brings up a whole lot of memories.
That's the thing we have. there's huge differences. You know, wild turkey is a wild turkey, but wild turkeys also do different things, and they act differently depending on their environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we've experienced that together a lot. You and
yeah.
I.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You've been out hunting already this season a few times, and you've tagged what, one bird so far?
One so far. Yeah. You're allowed three in the season. We're getting down to the last couple of weeks, so I probably need to get a little more serious. I bagged a bird on opening day. And then since then I've taken my daughter out a couple of times and had some nice hunts and, seen some other birds, heard some other birds, had a couple close calls. And it's just fun being out there, you know. I mean, that's probably the most enjoyable thing, especially with my daughter. So
yeah, your daughter, she's 6 years old, if I remember right.
Seven.
Okay.
Yep.
And the last turkey I killed was with her shotgun.
That's right. The one she hasn't shot yet. You broke it in. Yeah.
I did. And so it's what is that? A Mossberg? Was that a Mossberg?
Yep, that's a Mossberg 410 turkey gun.
And the 410 has become one of these hot, trendy ways to hunt turkeys. And so you showed me the gun, you laid it on the table, you went to work, and there was a box of ammo there. And when I came home with a buck because this was fall turkey season and deer season. And I shot a turkey with that gun, number nine
number nine TSS. Yeah, I mean, the turkey loads that these shotgun shell manufacturers come up with nowadays are pretty amazing. And, you know, the velocity of those pellets, even at, you know, 30 yards is wondrous compared to what, you know, an old 410 used to be. And the way they make the gun and the loads nowadays, they are very lethal on turkeys, as you saw for yourself.
Yeah, laid it out. Was she proud of me, or did she, was she mad that I killed a turkey with her gun when she wasn't there?
Oh, no, she was really excited. In fact, I showed her the empty shell and I said, you know what this is? And I explained it to her and she goes, oh, she got excited. And I said, yeah, I said, someday you're going to get to shoot your first turkey with that gun. But Uncle Gary got the first one and broke it in for you.
So, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Well, it's the middle of May now. In fact, even as we talk, this is the day when our friends are supposed to be applying for their deer and elk and antelope tags in Oregon. It's the tag deadline. And I still have people calling me, you know, asking for advice. This is stuff they should have sorted out a month ago. And I got people who, oh, I'm not going to hunt this year, Gary. Or it's too much money, you know, to apply for a tag right now. I'm low on funds. Well, it's $8, dude, to apply for the tag. You know, I've heard that from three different people. And, you know, you don't have to buy the license to apply for the tag. You buy the license after the tag is drawn. That's
right,
the way it works here in Oregon.
Well, and it's funny, you know, I mean, out of all the hunts and options we have here in Oregon, and as hard as it is to draw anything that's decent, I put in for everything. You know, I had some guys standing in line behind me the other day, and it cost me 80 some bucks to apply for everything. And that's including the premium extra hunts the ODF offers, you know?
Yeah.
So they were like, their comment from the guy right behind me was, you going hunting or, you know, because it took so long for me to put in for everything. And I turned and I said, you got to draw the tag first. And that's the biggest thing. It's like, you know, give yourself an opportunity, because if you don't give yourself an opportunity, you're never going to go.
Bingo, bingo. And, you know, that's a really good point. And we could belabor that for the rest of an hour, but turkey hunting gives you those opportunities. It's a great doorway into the sport for people if they want to become hunters. It's not really as hard as some people make it. It's really easy, actually, to get into the sport of turkey hunting. And there's enough luck involved where you can be lucky the first time you go hunting and bag your turkey. You know, and it might not be that way. You know, our friend Chase, he hunted 24 different days and before he killed one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
but now he's killed three, you know, so his efforts are paying off, you know?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, and Oregon is one of the best states in the country to come, you know, and we're noticing that with the amount of people that are in the woods and buying tags and coming from all over the United States to either go after their Grand Slam or come kill a Rio Grande in the Pacific Northwest. And Oregon does give a really good opportunity for spring and fall turkey alike. I mean, there's you can buy three tags in the spring and a couple in the fall, and you can kill five birds a year. And there's lots of different places to hunt, public, private, you name it.
Yeah, that's right. That's for sure. Okay, so we want to talk about the differences between yard birds and mountain birds. And the reason this came up one time, you and I were talking, and we were speculating on what people think, you know, when they see a photo, you know, you take this photo or you take that photo and you run it in a magazine story, and or you put it on social media. And then a person who's kind of astute and might have been around a while can look at a picture and know where it is because of the plant communities or maybe a mountain peak or something like that. I can look at a picture and from Oregon and I can tell you, you know, even if it's zoomed in, I've got a pretty good idea where you are. My daughter sent me a picture from Clear Lake, California, And I knew within 100 yards of where she was camping without her telling me.
That's so wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's a place I had been to before, and you know, I can do that from a picture in the Steens Mountains or a picture from, you know, Saddle Mountain or the Coast Range or whatever. And I know you can too. And there's a lot of people that can do that, but if it's a yard bird, you know, what do I mean when I'm talking about the Yardbirds?
Well,
it's not a rock and roll band.
Hey, it would be a good name though, right?
1960s.
There you go. That's the thing. There's various types of what you would quote unquote call Yardbirds. I mean, if you want to classify Yardbirds as Yardbirds, birds that live in agricultural land or out on dairy farms or small farms that come around the barnyard, or, you know, they're used to seeing people, they're used to seeing activity, they're used to seeing quads and tractors and irrigation pipe and harvest equipment. And, you know, they might have a feed pile that they come into that the cows are eating on, or, you know, but they're still a wild turkey. And they're still smart, and there's different ways you can hunt those birds and different ways you have to treat those birds to be successful. But yeah, they're a little more used to seeing humans, and they don't seem quite as obviously you go on the mountains and hunt mountain birds like you and I have hunted. That's a different ballgame, you know, and it's a different type of challenge. Every turkey has its challenges, but that's the difference.
Okay. So yard birds, it could be the barnyard, it could be the front yard, it could be the backyard, it could be, you know, next to the wood pile.
It could be the field, it could be be next to the wood pile, it could be the little patch of woods adjacent, it could be the apple orchard, the filbert orchard, you know.
I think about when I was hunting coyotes, hunting turkeys in the Ochocos, and a coyote came in. You know, we're after mountain birds for sure that day. You know, there's not a feedlot or a house within 10 miles of that place where I was hunting that day. I'm with my friend, we're doing hen sounds, feeding sounds, and this coyote comes in and it's just bopping along like everything's cool and is jumping at imaginary mice, but every, you know, zigging and zagging, and it gets close in, and then it focuses right in on me, and Mike's laying on the ground, and I shoot the coyote right over the top of him. And as I recall, I mean, maybe it wasn't exactly that way, but the coyote just went down flat with a load of number sixes in the neck. And, you know, that was a day where we didn't see a single turkey, but we were all over the place. We, you know, we had some gobbles in the morning and then nothing.
Yeah.
But, never forget that day. And then one of the greatest turkey hunting experiences of my life was hunting with you in the Ochocos, and we were running and gunning and following the sounds of gobbles, you know, most of the morning. And then we finally got out in front of a bird and he's answering us, and the hen is telling him, no, 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 don't you go to that other girl. And he comes in sold, and
he was sold. Yes.
Big old bird, no poison oak on that bird. You know, I didn't get poison oak that day.
No poison oak. But, and he was a double bearded bird.
Mm-hmm. So that was a big old mountain bird.
Yeah.
And what was hard about him was the space, you know, figuring where he was and then sorting out what we have to do. And he's not going to cross a fence. and he's not going to cross a creek. And what do we got to do to get in front of him? And then, and then sell the scenario. And then since he had a hen with him, you know, we had to overcome that also, not to mention the fences and the streams and the, and the rim rocks.
Yeah. The rim rock. I mean, you know, and the thing is the gobbles echo in that country. And so, like you said, pinpointing him was the hardest thing. And then he actually, he had more than one hen. He had like three or four hens, from what I recall. It was a group of them.
Yeah, that's right. There was more than one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might have had even a Jake or two with him. But once we got in close enough and we closed the distance and figured out where he was, it was enough for him to say, I'm going over there. You know, and I mean, I recall he came running down through the pines there and his beard was swinging and I was waiting for you to pull the trigger on the Weatherby. It was pretty neat to see that happen. And especially on those birds over there, that it's a lot of work, a lot of sweat, a lot of hard hunting. And that was definitely one of the best experiences.
Yeah, man, it was a long day too, you know, just getting out there. You know, especially for you driving over from Junction City, get to my place and then driving on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's going on right now in turkey land? Are the birds talking? Are they henned up? Are they searching?
Well, most of the turkeys now, and this is all dependent on where you're hunting. And if you're in the mountains or down in the valleys, or most of the breeding's tapering off. They gobble from the roost. They'll hit the ground and maybe gobble once or twice. There's not a lot of hens right now. Most of them are either sitting on nests or have actually hatched their poults out. So if you're going to get one off the roost, you got to find the roost tree. You got to be close to the roost tree. You got to convince that bird when he gets off the roost that you're ready for him. And he makes his mind up to come visit you. Otherwise, most of the birds this late in the season, in May, most of the birds I've killed, I've got maybe one gobble off of. I've killed most of them in the afternoon, and I'm usually sitting on a trail where they're going to go by to their roost tree, or they're going from a feeding area, you know, back and forth from their roost, because they're not going to talk a lot. I've had birds come in, I didn't even know they were there. They didn't even gobble till they got there, or they didn't gobble at all, and you just see them. They're all of a sudden there. And so picking out a really good place to sit where turkeys go back and forth, that's going to be your best bet for success with only 2 weeks left in season here, and the weather's warm and most of the hens are bred.
Okay, I like it. When you say most of the ones I get this time of year are in the afternoon, I like that. Because that way I don't have to get up at 3 a.m.
Right. Well, that's the problem. I mean, it's light birds are flying off the roost at 5:15. So it's like, if you don't get up at 3, you're not going to be and the afternoon hunts are great. I mean, especially for, you know, just taking my daughter along. She's not old enough to hunt yet, but you know, it's warm. The sun's out. She's not going to be cold. She can hike up the hill with me and we can sit under the tree in the sun and have a picnic and wait for a gobbler to hopefully show up. And it's a great, and Oregon's one of the states that allows you to hunt in the afternoon. A lot of states don't. So we're pretty lucky here that we can.
So the key word I picked up out of that is wait. And your ability to wait in one place is often the difference between success and failure. And if you can wait in one place for more than 2 hours, if you can do 3 or 4 hours in a good place, then your chances of success go way up, because these things, they're not on any kind of a timetable other than they want to be in their roost tree at dusk. And other than that, they've got nothing going on. They can loaf in the shade any place they want to, and they don't have to be anywhere except where some bugs are and some seeds are.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just like that bird you shot that year that Remember, he was up there probably laying on his belly. In fact, I know he was. He was laying on his belly, gobbling from his belly. And remember, he sat there and gobbled at us for a long time, but he wasn't going to move because he was up there laying down. It was hot. It was 80 degrees.
He had a bad leg too. So
yeah,
that's what we figured out about him is he didn't really want to move because of his bad leg. And we had no idea he had a bad leg until after I shot him.
Right. Right. Well, and that's the thing. I watch these birds on a daily basis because I've got a lot of birds around where I live. And you're right. These big old gobblers, this time of year, they're lazy. They're laying in the shade. They're laying in the grass. They're resting. They're eating. They're not gobbling. If you get a gobble from one, it's because he's shot gobbling because you yelped at him or you crow called at him or you owl hooted at him. And you're not going to get a lot of that. You're not going to get the hot gobblers coming in, running in like love crazed, like they do early in the season. It doesn't happen like that this time of year. Patience is the key. And if you can sit 2, 3, 4 hours in a spot, nice, comfortable spot where you've seen turkeys go by, chances are you're going to get a chance and you're going to get one.
Okay. So what makes sitting easier? For me, it's a dove hunting stool, the same stool I would sit on in a dove hunt, a three-legged stool. And if I can get that in a fascia blind, a one-sided blind, or maybe something that I built while I was there, take out my machete, or I'm in a ground blind. Those are things that allow me to sit in one place. I can move around a little bit more if I'm in a ground blind or a fascia blind, and I can, look back over my shoulder easier without catching the attention of some bird that might be sneaking in.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do is just find a nice tree or a fence, like a barbed wire fence, depending on, whether it's on public or private land. And, that's got some shrubbery or some grass around it. And, just make yourself comfortable. Take a cushion or a pad, or if you got a turkey vest that's got something like that, and just, I like to take my turkey vest off. I like to sit on my turkey vest. I like to get my canteen and water out. And I like to sit there and plan on just waiting. And I know which spot I'm talking about when I'm talking about a barbed wire fence. It's because we've been there before, shot at some birds and killed some birds. And but that spot, because I know turkeys like to come through there, I can spend 2 or 3 hours at that spot and be comfortable and be patient, because I know eventually something good's going to happen.
Yeah. Do you think that those birds in that place, we would call them mountain birds for the most part, even though they can get down into some farmland and stuff and walk around the houses, those are mountain birds.
Yeah.
Do you think they're smarter or less smarter than the birds down in the urban environment that live on the edges of towns and, walk through, 5-acre parcels and stuff and have to walk around a dog and kind of stay 100 yards away from the farmer? Which do you think is a smarter bird?
I think they're both just as smart as each other, but the mountain birds are more wary. And they're more wary because they have more things going against them as far as predators. And, so they are definitely more antsy. You can tell by the way they look around. I've had birds on a ridge line 250, 300 yards away, and they can tell it's not a deer that it's walking. It's a human being, and they turn around and they're gone. Now,
so true.
Yeah, you get these birds down in the farm yards and, around local, farms or dairies or whatever it may be, or orchards. They see people more often, so they may poke their head up, but they don't turn around and run off like the mountain birds do. I mean, they're just, the wariness is a lot less in that case, and that's the difference. Turkeys are smart, period. And the minute you think you got turkeys figured out, they prove that you don't, you know, and they humble you. They humble me every year. I've been doing this 30 some years. I've killed a lot of turkeys, and every year they frustrate me. They humble me. And the minute I think I know everything, they prove that I don't.
Yeah. So this would be my 26th turkey season now that I think about it. And, but what I, you know, I just flashed back on was how important it is to know where the roost tree is and don't expose yourself in the dark where they can see you from the roost tree. One of the places you and I walk in on, if they're roosted further down the hill, they see us walking in. It doesn't matter how early it is, you know, before daylight, they can cock an eye open and, you know, one bird or another is awake in that tree. And when they fly down, they're going to fly out 100 yards and hit the ground running, and they're not going to be anywhere near us in that moment.
It's they will see you. I mean, and that's the key. You know, and there's roost trees that they'll use on a regular basis. As long as they're not disturbed around the roost tree, they're going to keep using that roost tree all season. They'll use it all season. The whole flock will, except for the hens that are on the nest. And, you know, I remember one year, Dad and I had this bird. He was flying down the same spot every day, and smart bird. And I told my dad, I said, let's go in there in the dark. And he flies down in this same spot every day. Let's go in the pitch black. Let's turn our headlights off and we'll just make it in there. We'll just take our time. We got in there and we thought we had it licked, you know, and that bird literally had been flying down to the same little meadow every day and strutting. And we were, you know, 30 yards from that meadow, 40 yards from that meadow. And we snuck in the dark. And I was sure that we were going to get this big old gobbler. He was roosting in a huge pine tree with huge limbs. And so it's starting to get light. And he's gobbling from the roost and I'm calling back to him. And then finally that bird takes off his limb and he flies about a half a mile across the valley. Didn't even take a look at us. And he was smart enough to realize something wasn't right, even though we did everything right.
Yep.
He knew because of the hen call that I was making that she was too close to his roost tree and she wasn't roosted around him or near him. And I think he was like, well, I'm going to fly clear across the valley and go find another hen. Because he didn't give us a look, not a sniff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we've got 16 days left in the season, how do we appeal to a gobbler now? Is it a lot of hen talk or is it spare hen talk? Or do we want to try to get between the gobblers and where the lone hens are? If we can hear a hen talking, is it a good idea to get between them, or do we want to get on the other side of a hen and bring the extra gobblers past a real hen maybe?
Yeah. If you can establish a conversation with hens that are vocal and you can make them mad and get them to come to you, you can usually drag a gobbler or some jakes. But I will say this, late in the season, not calling that much at all is the best thing. Playing hard to get is the best thing because those gobblers are so desperate to find a hen that if they hear you once and you do happen to get a gobble, I guarantee you they know right where you're at. And if you go silent for 25, 30 minutes after you get that response from a yelp or a cut or a cluck, that I guarantee you he's going to have closed the distance, whether he gobbles again or not, and he's coming probably. You know, if you overcall this time of year, I've had more birds than not just go the other way because they know that's not normal. It's not normal in nature to hear a really talkative hen this time of year. So you just got to be really sparing. And the whole key for late season success is just don't call that much and have a lot of patience, and you're going to probably do really well.
One time up on a mountain, I'd been glassing 6 gobblers, and I could get them to respond to me. I was down in the valley using the binoculars. I could get them to respond to me. I knew it was going to be the hottest day of the year. It was actually the last day of the season. Mm-hmm. And when I realized they were going to work their way around the top of this ridge, then me and the guy I was with, we got in the truck and drove around there. And then he waited in the truck, and then I worked my way up that ridge, and then I just made a little bit of hen talk, and boom, they fired up again, and there was a hen between me and them. And when the gobblers showed up to me, there were 5 left. One had peeled off at the real live hen, and then 5 had kept coming, and then I shot the biggest one out of that group.
Nice. Yeah. And that's what you got to do. I mean, you know, we say sitting and waiting and patience is a big deal, but sometimes, especially on the late season birds too, you got to make your breaks. And if you see ones going down, I had one year, he was going down the ridgeline and he was probably 500-600 yards away. And I knew where this ridgeline went. And so I hightailed it. And I mean, you know, sweating, huffing and puffing. And I got down there before he did. And about 2 minutes before he showed up, I yelped and he was right there. Long story short, he came right in within like 15 yards, but he was behind so much brush, I couldn't shoot him. But if I would have been in just a little bit different spot, I would have got him no problem. And you know, a lot of times that's how you got to do it. You got to get out ahead of them and anticipate what they're going to do. And that's not easy because they always do something usually that you don't think they're going to do. So anyway,
that reminds me, you told me where to sit one time and I thought, no, I'm smarter than that. I'm going to go sit in this other place. And that turkey went right to the spot where I was supposed to sit.
Yeah.
And that I had was to take funny. A yeah. long shot and I missed.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. Okay. They're humbling, man.
A couple years ago, ODFW started a program where if you had turkey problems as a landowner, that you could sign up and then hunters could reserve a place to hunt on your property. So if it was like a 5-acre piece, somebody could come out and hunt on your property. And as the person who maybe has a situation like that, you've been invited to hunt yard birds on a 2-acre piece or a 5-acre piece or a 10 or 15. And how do you be successful at that now in the last 2 weeks of the season if it's a yard bird situation?
Well, it's pretty easy. You'd talk to the person that owns the yard or the farm land. And you say, hey, where are these birds coming? What time are they showing up? What do they do? When are you seeing them? And, you know, some people say, well, I see them all the time and they're all over the place. It's like, yeah, but where do you see them?
That's the one I'm afraid of. I don't want to go to that guy's property. I want to go to the guy who says, well, they show up here at 4 o'clock, you know, You want to be there 2 hours before or 2.5 hours before and sit down and wait and don't change the landscape.
No, like, I mean, that's
don't put up a blind.
Right. Right. Don't
move the wood pile.
Nope. They notice. They're so smart. They notice anything that's changed. You know, I've seen people, you know, they've had birds coming in and out of a place, you know, through the barnyard or out in a field or a field edge or whatever it may be. And they'll prune a brush pile and stick the brush pile right around where the turkeys normally go. Well, those turkeys see that brush pile and they aren't coming anywhere close close to that brush pile. You know,
that'd be 10 days before they're coming back to that spot.
Yeah. So, yeah, in that case, with the yard birds, if you get some good intel from the landowner or whatever it may be, go in light, don't make anything noticeable, and just try to make everything look as natural as it did before, because those birds will notice any little tiny thing that's out of place.
Like your gun barrel sticking out of a wood pile.
Yeah, that doesn't look right, you know. And you know, that's I think that's the biggest thing. And find, you know, if the landowner has cattle or horses or sheep or whatever it may be, just make sure you're safe going in there and you know where their animals are. And usually they'll point you in the right direction, you know, whether it's 50 acres or 2 acres. And you'll get a good opportunity if you do a little investigating like that.
Right. And don't give up if it doesn't happen for you the first day, because the statistics, at least where we live, the statistics are if you put in a good solid effort for 2.5 days, you're going to kill a turkey.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way the statistics run. And it doesn't matter if it's your first season or your 30th season.
Yeah.
You know, play the game and play the percentages, and you'll get your turkey every 2.5 days of effort.
Yeah. Well,
that's the way I think.
Well, it's true. If you average it out, if you count the number of hours that you're out there, and you know, if I count the number of hours I spend each year, the amount of time I spend usually equates to, you know, a turkey every couple days, every 16 hours or whatever you put in. And, you know, you hear these guys that hunt backcountry birds. Yeah, I put on 56 miles in 3 days and I killed a turkey. And you still spent your 2.5, 3 days, whether you put 56 miles on or not. I mean, you know, there's probably the population density of the turkeys probably aren't as much in the mountains, obviously, as they are down in the lowlands. But that's a good rule of thumb, Gary. It's about 2.5 days.
What's your turkey gun right now?
The same turkey gun I've used for years. And it's my Remington 870 Super Magnum, 3.5 inch. And my favorite round is the Federal 4.56 blend turkey loads, 3.5 inch turkey loads.
Ooh, you're putting the hurt on them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm back to using the Weatherby again. I have a turkey choke in it. It's a semi-automatic and it's matte black. And it's the one I've made my longest shots with. And, you know, after hunting in Florida, when I missed that big Osceola turkey last year, I don't want to miss the next one.
Yeah. Well, and I was with you on that one, and that was a heartbreaker. It really was. And I don't blame you. I mean, you got to go back to what works for you. And I know you had a lot of success with that Weatherby, you know, back in the day. So going back to a new one that's similar, that's going to probably help improve your confidence and your success, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you just want to, you want all the, you know, distance you can get. I'm not the one usually that goes to a 3.5 inch load. But I do want to pattern whatever I'm using. You know, if I'm using a different load than I used before, I want to pattern it.
Yeah, that's important.
Okay, so a person who's never been successful calling a turkey, what do you tell them?
Be patient. You don't have to sound perfect. I know a lot of people that don't sound that awfully close to a turkey, but they seem to call one in every year and kill one. Practice different sounds, spend as much time as you can around real turkeys and try to mimic the sounds that they make. But when you're first starting out as a turkey caller, get a call that's easy to use and that you can practice on and learn to make some of those simple sounds. And if you can make the simple sounds, chances are you can call in a turkey. I mean, the biggest thing is if you can mimic a hen, if you have a hen yelping at you in a cadence and you can mimic her back and forth and have a talk with her, and chances are that's how you're going to get a bird in.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. And then the only thing I would add to that is be quieter than you think you need to be, because I believe their hearing is so much superior to ours.
Oh yeah.
That they could be talking back to you from a long way away and you can't hear them because your hearing isn't that good, but their hearing is really good. And the only kind of stuff they're interested in hearing is turkey talk. So a lot of the other sounds are just noise.
Yes.
But if there's turkey talk, that's what they're interested in. And if you're talking real quiet, I think it sells them on the scenario.
It's so crazy how good their hearing is. Probably one of the biggest examples I have is I was calling a bird once and I was sitting under this tree and he was gobbling and he was getting closer, and then all of a sudden he shut up and I didn't hear anything from him for about 45 minutes to an hour. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to move. And so I moved about 45 yards in the direction I thought where he may have been heading. And no more had I got sat down in the new spot, all of a sudden here he comes and he shows right up to where I had been sitting, because he knew that's where the sound was coming from a very long ways away. And he had me pinpointed from a very long ways away. And the old timers always say, you know, there's guys that the old timers will sit down and they'll yelp three or four times on their box call or mouth call or slate call or whatever it may be. And then they don't do anything else. And, you know, I had one guy tell me, he goes, I don't have to call anymore. He says, they know where I'm at. Eventually they'll be here.
So true. So true. And I forget that. It's a lesson that I've learned before. And Joe, the bird man over there in Washington, you know, Joe Biggs.
Yeah.
He showed that to us, and we killed two big gobblers.
Yeah.
In one spot without moving. And, you know, one of the better turkey hunts of my life. Also, yeah. I've had some good turkey hunts. You know, those are also mountain birds.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's springtime and the flowers are growing, and your farmers that you work with, what are they seeing? How are their crops popping up?
This is one of the better springs we've had in recent years, just because we've had some really dry springs where it quit raining in early March and it got warm, and anything that didn't have irrigation kind of suffered through late spring into early summer. And this year we have had such a cool, moist spring. It reminds me of the springs we used to have about 20 years ago. And I gauge a lot of the springs not on what I remember from the crops, it's what I remember when I'm turkey hunting, you know. And, you know, you got slushy snow coming down, and on April 15th, the opening day of turkey season. And it was like that this year. It was cold and slushy snow, and haven't experienced that in Western Oregon in a very long time. And so when it equates to the crops are really healthy this year and they're looking really good.
Okay. And then if there's people out there who've picked up our forage blend and they've got that in the ground, and there's other people that have thought about getting this forage blend that we offer, and to bring in the deer and the elk, you know, and to establish patterns for deer seasons and elk seasons coming up. What about the person who hasn't gotten the forage in the ground? Do they still have an opportunity? or should they be looking ahead to next season?
It's not too late. I mean, you know, we could have some really good rains here in late May, throughout June. Typically, we even get a little rain around the 4th of July. That's always been, you know, one of those deals. Everybody wants to go watch fireworks and everybody's scared it's going to rain on the 4th. And because we have, it's not too late. And here's the thing. I will say this, doing a spring planting now, especially if you have irrigation, it's going to be just fine. If you plant it now and we don't get a lot of rain, which is possible, but with the weather pattern we're having, probably not likely, probably get some rain. That seed will actually lay dormant all summer, wherever you plant it. And when we get our first fall rains, it'll still come up then too. So getting your hands on some seed now and getting it in the ground is either going to get you ahead of the game or it's going to put you in the game for the fall anyway. So there's no reason not to grab some.
Yeah. And if you can get some water on it, then that's the thing you want to do. Okay. So it's a 5-pound bag. It's going to seed approximately 1 to 1.5 acres. It's got white clover, forage brassica, ryegrass seed. Anything else you want to say about that?
That mixture right there, I'll just say the mixture that we have on our wildlife mixes, you know, you've got the legumes in there, you've got the ryegrass or a winter wheat or a spring wheat that is a grain crop that pops up, you know, with the clover and the brassica, you know, and occasionally, you know, we'll have some peas in there. That is a great combination because it's high in protein and the sugar content, the deer and the elk and the turkeys love the sugar content and the fresh sprouts. And the nutritional value is so high in the small sprouts. That's what those animals are going to want to be feeding on, and it'll sustain them through the summer. And also, even if, you know, like I said earlier, if it doesn't germinate till the fall, they're going to want those fresh shoots that start to germinate in September and October, because that's what keeps them going. That's what, they crave.
Okay. 5-pound bag, $44.95 plus shipping, and it'll seed approximately 1 to 1.5 acres. And how much more do you need to keep an animal coming in? I had a little plot, you know, of this stuff that I did a test run on at my place in town, and a buck came in and he camped on that stuff for 10 days. He just slept right in the middle of it. And I got my eyes on him one time and he was just laying down eating. And I thought, man, did I make it easy for that guy?
Well, it's funny. I do. I put it in my backyard, you know, and I'll wake up in the morning and there'll be two or three does laying around or a buck laying there. And it's almost like they're protecting their little food plot. You know, they don't want, and you know, the deer will kick at each other and chase each other off. And it's like, man, it must be pretty good if they're doing that, you know? So, and we've been doing this for years, you know, with these blacktails, and it works. It truly works. I mean, I wouldn't be promoting it if it didn't. And I know I'm a true believer. That's for sure.
Well, if it works for blacktails, it works even better for a mule deer because
yes,
we don't have as many plant communities and as much to eat on the east side of the state. So they focus on certain types of food. And if they can get something that's really good, a really good supplement for a few weeks, even, then it'll change their patterns and they'll keep coming back.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason you see a lot of mule deer down in the alfalfa fields and around the pivots and eating the fresh vegetation, because that's what they desire. And if you've got a food plot that has some great, great items in it, you know, and different varieties of seed, you're going to bring the deer. And you'll bring them from a long ways. And like you said, they'll be camping on it. That's for sure.
Okay. So to get the wildlife forage blend, it's go to GaryLewisOutdoors.com, click on store, read about the product there, send me an email, GaryLewisOutdoors@gmail.com, or just go to BaileySeed.com and then look for the wildlife forage blend there, either way.
Yep, do that. And we're all here to help you out and answer any questions you have and make your food plots good and desirable for your wildlife.
And the thing that we really like is hearing success stories and somebody saying, you know, I put that in and here's what I've been seeing. You know, I love to hear that kind of input. So GaryLewisOutdoors@gmail.com.
Yes, absolutely. We love
and success. How can people find you, Troy?
You can find me at Troy Outdoors on Instagram and Troy Rudikowski on Facebook. And you can also find me at the Bailey Seed website, www.baileyseed.com. And I'm here to talk or visit or answer any questions you have.
All right. Well, it's good catching up. And then we each have some last, you know, couple week turkey hunts to do here. So stay in touch and maybe we'll even get to hunt together in the last day or two of the season. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm sure we'll have some stories to tell each other regardless. But yeah, it's always good talking to you, buddy. Yeah.
I remember I've got a tree stand I still have to take down.
You got to come over and get your tree stand. You know, I wonder how many animals have walked past your tree stand.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. Drive a guy crazy.
If you like this podcast, you can find more scintillating content at GaryLewisOutdoors.com.